Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, we talk to Kelly Syed, and she tells us all about their nonprofit sawmill in Atlanta. Thanks for listening. What it do, homies?
Oh, what's happening?
Oh, my goodness. What have y'all been up to? Because I'm running on E as far as time goes.
Well, I got back from WorkbenchCon first year.
Yeah, it must have been great because you didn't post a lot.
No, I mean, I didn't. I mean, I tried to make sure I posted. So I did an expert desk on bookkeeping basics and understanding your bottom line as a business owner. That was on Friday at 1 o'clock. So I was trying to make sure to post about that in my stories at least, so that folks knew that were there. And that went really well. Had real good turnout on that one and really enjoyed it. And then, I mean, I made the best of the whole weekend, even though I don't post a whole lot of content outside of my CPA page. And I don't do YouTube videos anymore. I was just eating up the whole weekend and trying to get the most out of it. Cause I figured even if I'm not doing those things now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to, I'd like to think that I'll definitely get back into posting more. And then also as we talk here or I'm talking with other makers or whatever, I just like to be in the know on things. So that was, I was just really, really glad I went. I went to a variety of classes talking about everything from selling items when you only have a small following, or balancing a day job plus the side hustle, or an AI class for content creators, which kind of froze, kind of fried my brain a little bit and scared me a little bit, but very insightful. And then a YouTube tips and suggestions class. And then I also took Joe Jax's class about editing and just that time saving process.
I saw Stephanie had posted, they did some Guess Who boards using AI to generate. And I was like, man, if you had a big enough family, if any of you have big families looking at, man, what a good idea for Christmas gifts.
Yeah, that was probably one of the fun surprises that Stephanie made me into a little AI person. And so I was pretty tickled of that. And the fact that she was curvy. I mean, Stephanie did me right by giving me a curvy girl. I'm like, you're right, girl. So that was fun. And there was a lot of brands there I visited with and everything too. Like I said, I'm not wanting to get sponsorships. That's not my goal, but there were a lot of those conversations going on. And then just the social side. The funny thing was everybody that I met or everybody that I saw that I already knew, I had a little, we had little buttons on our tags that said I was a newbie because this was my first year to WorkbenchCon. Everybody that knew me and was like, well, this isn't your first year. I'm like, yeah, no, seriously, this is my first year. So I don't know why everybody thought I'd already been there, but I hadn't. But it really was a great experience and a lot of information that came from all the different opportunities. And so I really thoroughly enjoyed it as both as a maker, content creator, and as someone there, doing a talk. I thought the whole process went really well. Hotel was super nice. Weather was terrible, which was fine because we stayed in the hotel pretty much the whole time. And then my hotel room was right across from the Atlanta Braves Stadium. So I was able to see baseball even in February, March. So that was, it was a nice perk for me. I actually have not been to that stadium to watch a game yet, but it's definitely on my list. But yeah, I had a great time. And I'll be going back next year, I'm sure, to do a talk again. But if I were to even get back into wanting to, either make products or do content creation, I would be going there too, because I did think it was a really good opportunity for both the social side and the knowledge side. So that was my enjoyable and exhausting weekend. I only stayed up till I think 12:30 each night. God love those. Some of the rest of them. Whew. 4:30 in the morning, 6:30 in the morning.
That's the only post I saw were bar post.
Yeah.
Lobby
post. And then, you know, that's part of the fun of it is staying up late and, you know, not having to worry about the weather or whatever, because we're all inside. And one of the bourbon distributors, Old Elk, I think that's the name of it, they hosted one evening, so it was free drinks there, and they had music playing, and I mean, I was sore the next morning from dancing, which is, it's been a long time since that's been the case. But yeah, I mean, it was, you could just tell so many folk, well, there was a ton of us that were new. There was a big get together for all of the new people that first day, which was a great opportunity to kind of interact, because folks, thankfully, I'm blessed with having had a lot of opportunities to meet a lot of makers in person. And so for me, I wasn't necessarily nervous about going because I knew that I would know a lot of people. But there was a ton of folks there that had never been to any kind of gathering together in the maker community. So it was good for them and meet and see all ranges of experience and having good conversations with folks of all levels, starting out or folks that have been around for a long, long time. So yeah, it was a win-win all around for me.
What about our resident content creator? What have you been up to, Austin?
Oh man, I've been all over the place this week.
Cursing out Rust-Oleum.
Yeah, got a fight with Rust-Oleum. Worked out great. They sent me a note saying, don't do that anymore. But I smashed the can on my project. That video didn't do great at the beginning, and then it's been taken off pretty good since then.
Good.
Yeah.
And
Chris said before you did that a while back, Chris had said the tip for making videos is make something explode. So you were actually taking Chris's tip right on point. Explosions. Yeah. That'll get you going.
I thought for sure the way that, because like normally when people are like, clean out a spray paint can, they're like, turn it upside down and spray it. I was like, so you turn it upside down and then you smash the shit out of it.
It was so funny. The day you posted that was the first day I'd ever seen the new Rust-Oleum can with the 5.5 selector. I had gone to AutoZone and saw it there. I was like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. Terrible.
So there's really five. There's like multiple.
Yeah, you just spin it and it's five. It's like a garden hose, like the multi garden hose, basically. But it's just not, that doesn't work. Like it just didn't work on any of the settings. And so finally I was just so angry. Cause like I had just painted, this was like, I needed like one more little section sprayed. And I was so flipping angry because I'm like, oh, let me just, it sprayed the first test, you know, I tested on the sawhorse and then I go to my project and it just goes blah, 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 and just sputtered all over it. This is like my second or third coat. I don't even remember it. And I was so angry. I just pulled out my phone and just started recording like my stories about how disappointed I was. Like
three stories in a row.
Yeah, man. I mean, not only did it ruin the project, I spent $70 on spray paint. $70. Yeah. And every can sucked.
I could totally tell you were genuinely mad about that.
I was so pissed.
Oh, I could. Yeah. Definite genuine.
Yeah. So so it doesn't look like I got hit with the spray paint, but I definitely got nailed with it. Yeah. So like my favorite pants have a blue line where my shirt was hanging. It's just like a straight horizontal line at the crotch of blue.
Balls or just
the pants? Balls and legs, yeah. Okay. What I didn't think about either was like how far when you explode a spray paint can, how far it goes.
No, we didn't have a driveway.
It went all over. No, I was in the grass. It went all over the grass. It went. My tripod was like 6 feet away. Not only did it cover my entire tripod, it covered my whole phone.
Oh no.
And I had to, when you see me dart off camera, it's me going to get my phone. Cause I had to try to get the spray paint off of it before it dried. And,
that's awesome.
Ended up jacking up my whole back of my phone case is like all acetone removed and it still has blue paint all over it. But when I watched it, I was like, that's funny. Post it, you know, And
and
then they wrote me back. Good for them. Like, they wrote to me and they were like, hey, we're so sorry you're having these issues. You know, if you prefer the old traditional cans, we will be happy to send you a case of them. Just let us know. And so, yeah, they're sending me a case of paint. And I was like, just so you know, these ones better be good or they're getting fucking smashed. I've been doing the desk. That's the new desk for my new laser that's coming. It's actually the workbench for the laser. I've been doing 3D printed masks like crazy for the kids. I've been doing, like, I did Blue Beetle. I did, the kids watched The Rocketeer and got like super into it.
Oh.
So I'm doing The Rocketeer. I'm actually printing right now. I'm starting the printing of the jetpack, which is an unbelievable undertaking. It's like 30 giant pieces.
Oh, wow.
And I found out, so I was talking to Jacob the other day, and he was talking about ludicrous mode, where you can take your bamboo and throw it into 166% speed. And the prints are coming out flawless at this, like, the printer sounds like it's going to freaking take off. Like, it's going so fast. And even on that big, heavy cabinet, the whole, like, you walk in the room, you're like, I think the floor is shaking. Like, it is so violent. But I mean, I took a 14-hour print today and turned it into a 7.5-hour print.
Oh, wow. So
it's moving. And it looked great. Like, it looked flawless.
I've been liking how on the Saturday Zoom calls, you're using it like Jacob teaching a course. Like, I was realizing, yes, because I'm doing other stuff, and I was like, you guys just flew past me on 3D printing knowledge, because for two weekends, you just asked Jacob questions and learned how to do something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's how you learn, right? So,
yeah.
And asking like very detailed, like very pointed questions, not just like,
because y'all were talking about like orientation of a mask to get, you know, the biggest print and the surface and how to slice and how to change where the anchors were. And I was like, what the fuck are they doing?
But, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and this makes me think, and maybe we'll talk about this on Patreon. I mean, we've been together almost 3 years, 3 years now, 4 years. Doing a podcast for 3 years, but we've been together for almost 4 years. And I'm just thinking through what all we've learned from each other over that time, but we don't need to dig into that now. But
you need to know a guy. That's the key.
Yeah.
You know, a guy about each thing. And then, my last big thing was I'm swapping out my old Shapeoko CNC and I'm pulling in my new Onefinity CNC, which the rigidness and how stout the Onefinity is impressive. As soon as I pulled out of the box, I was like, man, this thing is like heavy duty.
Yeah, they had two of those at WorkbenchCon on display, and with Onefinity was there. And I've got the Shapeoko, which is a whole nother conversation, but I'm just like, dang, that's what a real CNC should look like.
I want
like
one so bad. I've always wanted one, but I didn't have a place for it.
Right. For now.
Yeah. That the Mazo controller is legit. Like, that thing is legit. I've been messing with it and like program it. Like, you can program like, all
that's
your
something
tools.
I would never spend
like
the money on, but it looks amazing.
I mean, why not? Why not spend the money on it? You know, it's not that much more. It's like, I mean, I know it's more, but I know it's easy for me to say that.
Yeah, it's very easy for you to say that. You've been doing very well lately. Whoring around.
Yep. Shaking my booty on TikTok. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. It's been a like super busy couple of weeks or week or whatever since we've chatted.
What's the deal?
I've been packing, man.
So you got the house?
Yeah, we got the house. I that's true, because I think like right after we recorded early last time.
Yeah, last
and then right after
Sunday.
We recorded on a Sunday. Okay. On the Tuesday it was finalized. And so we got the house, and I refused to pack anything because I thought it was going to fall through the whole time.
Right.
And so now I've had 10 days to pack the whole house, which I didn't think was a big deal until I worked for 4 hours to pack the bar, and I got about half of it done.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just the bar. It's just bottles. What am I going to do in bedrooms? And it's not things like clothes or, you know, what's in drawers or closets. It's what do you do with a vase? What do you do with, you know, flowers? What do you do with potpourri? What do you do with, or things that don't fit? Like, what do you do with lightsabers? You know, they don't fit in a box.
You go and you buy specific odd shaped boxes, like the TV box that will expand, and then you could put the any size TV in that box.
Is that worth it? I was just gonna stick that shit in my truck.
Well, it depends on how many times you want to be driving back and forth. We have used them multiple times, and this weekend when I'm moving Katie, I'm taking those same TV boxes with us. So it just kind of depends. For you guys, it might not be worth it because you're not going to plan on moving regular, but we ever have again. Enough people. Well, yeah. But we have enough people in our immediate circle that will be using those boxes, and we got storage space for them. But then you buy the bubble wrap at Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever. Yeah. And then you buy the little sleeves that you put your plates in. And then they've got a ton of that kind of stuff. And honestly,
so I didn't want to spend the money on movers. And so I spent hundreds of dollars on boxes and packing material and dollies mm-hmm. and carts and all this stuff. And I was like, all this could have went towards movers. So today I rented a U-Haul, but I booked two people to come help me load the U-Haul. And then that's my good. Friends and I will unload the U-Haul when at the new house. But I figure it's much harder to load because you're trying to play Jenga with all the pieces, and mm-hmm. unloading is just taking everything out as fast as you can. So
I've wondered about those, like those pods where they come and they drop off the pod.
So that's how we moved to Houston. And what was awesome mm-hmm. about that was we didn't have a house for 6 months. So the pod would just stay in storage until we had a house. I will say several pieces of wood furniture came back cracked or warped because of the heat. Mm. And it's kind of hard when you're living somewhere and all your tools are in storage and you don't have access to them. So there were a lot of things I went and bought at Lowe's just because I didn't have a toolbox at all.
Well, I would recommend, as you are putting, from my personal experience, it took me way, way longer to get back into certain boxes. So have certain things labeled that you want to open right away, but anticipate it taking a long time to get into all of the boxes.
Yeah,
at least that was our personal experience.
I'm not naive to that at all. What I'm worried about is we don't have it unpacked, and then my mom comes to dog sit, and we have all these boxes still packed, and I know she won't be able to let that happen. So I've got to make sure I get at least some semblance. The other thing is I took y'all advice and went ahead and started on this arcade since y'all both encouraged me to do it. And what's happened is I've reached a point where there's been some complications where it comes to mounting the monitor. So I had to end up going with a larger actuator than the original plan. And so there's not enough room for the monitor as is, but I can make a complicated multi-swivel stand that will tuck the monitor in. It's just going to take some fabrication and some math, or I can just buy a smaller monitor, screw it on there and be done. And so I've purchased a smaller monitor and a mount for it, but I'm going to take one crack at doing the complicated fix. Because the whole point was I have these old monitors. I want to do something with them. Well, it kind of defeats that whole point if I just buy a new monitor. And so I'm going to take one swing at it. And if it doesn't work, then I'll just mount the smaller monitors. But basically what's happening is I mounted the actuator that was small, size-wise, and it would close the lid. And by that, I mean, it would just fall because of gravity and it wouldn't open the lid. And so I had to buy a much larger actuator. And then what happened is the brace on the lid was hitting the actuator. So the shaft of the actuator was larger than the gas strut it replaced. So when the lid would close, the brace that went across the lid was hitting the actuator and stopping it from closing. So on the Zoom call, I went to cut the brace out and the battery died on my grinding wheel. And this was so awesome. This was awesome. Okay. So the battery died on the grinding wheel and Keith was pissing me off with his nonsense about hashtags versus tags versus whatever complicated bullshit they do over there at Working Hands. And so I went to cut it and the battery died on the grinder. And I said, you know what? Stop. And I have multiple brands of grinders with multiple brands of batteries, but I was like, just stop. Go inside before you hurt yourself or cut a big jagged line. It looks like shit. So I went inside. So the next day I woke up to come out here and Kristen said, hey, do you want to go get bagels? And I said, okay, let's go. And we were driving to get bagels. And when we're driving back, it was like a rock hit me in the back of the head. And I was like, I don't need to move the brace. I need to move the actuator. So instead of cutting the brace out, I can just drop the mounting point of the actuator down and it will clear. And so this actuator came with brackets and the bracket dropped it an inch if I used it. And so I just cut a notch to where now the bracket I could fit, tacked it in place. That dropped the actuator enough to clear it. But then it is unbelievably confusing on where 2 points you need to mount a support for a lid to get the lid to close after. And so right. in my brain, I was thinking, I want to move the actuator out of the way of the monitor, when in reality, I needed to move it down the exact same distance at the bottom as I'd moved it at the top. And so I put four screw nuts, rivet nuts, into the toolbox trying to get this thing to close. It never would close. And then finally, I just was like, okay, I'm just going to drop it the same distance at the bottom that I did at the top. And it closed the first try. So I've got that in there. It works great. Same kind of thing happened with the switches. I wanted a toggle switch, but I don't have a three-way toggle switch for off, open, and close. So I was like, well, I'm going to go buy one. Like, I wanted one, like, I don't know what they're called, where it's got, like, the paddle. I didn't want a button. I didn't want a toggle button. I wanted a paddle or, like, a little stick. So I went up to AutoZone to buy one, and they didn't have any. And so I was driving back from AutoZone, and it hit me. I was like, so I was going to cut a hole. The reason I wanted that was I can cut a hole in metal, a circle, much easier than I can cut a square. So if I have a switch that's a circle, I can just drill a hole, mount the switch. With this square toggle, I was going to have to cut a square that doesn't look like shit, and I didn't want to do all that. And so I'm driving back, and I'm like, why am I cutting in the metal? I have a wood piece of plywood that I mounted all the controls in. I can just mount them down there. And so I had two of these big aha moments on this project that I enjoy when that happens. It was just kind of like, wow, this is so clear. Why didn't I think of this earlier? This is going to work great. The other thing in other news, I know some people have been messaging me about the power issues I was having on Land Cruiser. Well, my new truck, the voltage regulator that I ordered on February 19th finally came in on March 1st. And so it was supposed to be 2 days. It showed up 10 days. One bolt, plugged it in, working flawlessly. So everything's awesome. Working great now. It was a $20 part. And I figured as much. It was the last one that came in. So
yeah, Nick came in my shop about a week and a half ago. He's like, Dean needs to change the voltage regulator.
Yeah, I ordered one. The day I bought I ordered an alternator and a voltage regulator on the same day. The alternator was delivered the next day, and I put it in. The voltage regulator showed, and I tried to cancel it twice, and it told me it couldn't cancel. And so actually what I ended up doing was going buy one at O'Reilly, and I paid twice as much for it. And then when the one came in from Amazon, I thought about returning it to O'Reilly to get my money back. But then I was like, you know what? I would rather send this back to these same assholes so they have to eat the shipping cost. And so that's
yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm right.
We'd like to thank our folks over at Patreon for the support that they give us. You can join them over there at patreon.com/makingourway. And on our top tier, we'd like to thank Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Oram from Dad It Yourself, Ozark Spirit, Chris Shelby, Nick Birchtold, Andrew Richard Makes, and Mark and Donna with Rockin' K Creations. Tonight, we're joined with Kelly Syed with Atlanta Wood Foundation. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about Atlanta Wood Foundation and what it is?
Sure. We are an urban forestry 501c3. It's an urban beautification classification because we are keeping a hard wood out of the landfill. So it's, you know, carbon friendly. When homeowners or businesses have to take a tree down for whatever reason, or if it falls from a storm, because we have lots of those that take down trees here in Georgia, they can donate trunk to us. They get a tax credit based on the dollar amount. We can mill from that log. The species and the diameter, you know, drive that value. Nice. We mill them and we kiln dry them, and then we sell them to local woodworkers like ourselves.
Excellent. So we met on at WorkbenchCon this past weekend. And when I saw your sticker, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I definitely have to learn more about this. So how did this come about as far as setting this foundation up?
So like many people during COVID and the wood cost just got crazy because my husband and I have a woodworking side hustle. Like that's what we started literally right a few months before the world imploded. Yeah. And so we were doing great. Like that first year, we got everybody was home and doing, you know, working on their homes and doing things. And so we had a lot of custom orders. And then when the wood prices got crazy, like, I mean, we literally had to quote every day and be like, you literally no high pressure, but you have to decide this today because tomorrow, God knows what the price is going to be. Yeah. So one day my husband, we should get a mill and we can mill our own wood.
Yes.
And so like most things, it took forever to come because the engines are built in Canada and the bodies are built in the States. So they had Wood Miser, I think they're in Indiana. They had a ton of bodies like waiting for their engines to come over, but that whole import export thing was not happening. So it took about 8 months from the time that we ordered it to get it. And so we had reached out to a couple of friends about doing mobile milling with us because there's a lot of workers and a lot of people when they have down trees, they want to keep the wood. They don't want it to go to a land. And we met, a couple of guys who were interested. But then when we talked to Chris, who is our partner in the foundation, he was like, we should turn it into a nonprofit and we can get tree companies to donate the trees to us. And then that way we can, you know, not have to purchase logs or hunt them down or whatever. But really, it's the homeowners that are more interested in it. Tree companies are just so busy here. They want to get from one job to the next. But we have found a few smaller ones who, you know, are really trying to be green and they're really, you know, kind about when they get a good species, they'll give me a call and say, hey, you know, can we drop some walnut logs or cherry logs or whatever off at the warehouse? And they do.
That's awesome.
That's great. So let's go back to, I mean, I'm familiar with setting up a foundation, but I doubt very many listeners are. So I'm curious, what were the steps that, and the headaches or hurdles that you guys had to go through in order to set up this foundation?
So Chris took on that joyful process. We're like, we will get the mill. You do the paperwork. But it actually, it happened, I guess, just because so many people were, you know, working from home, it actually came through. We got our 501c3 before we got the mill. We didn't see that coming. So for him, I mean, it wasn't as bad. It went faster, it seemed like, than normal because my day job, I run an art gallery and we used to, before COVID, also be an event space. And so I worked with a lot of nonprofits who I knew like the paperwork and that hurdle was a huge process, but it went really smoothly and really quickly for us. I guess COVID was on our side for that one.
Yeah, that is that's record timing. I know that like after we had the tornado down here in Joplin, certain groups were able to set up foundations quickly, but that is quite out of the ordinary. So that's fantastic for you guys that it did work so smoothly on the front end with the paperwork side. So as far as like the process that you guys go through let's go back to where when you guys started this and how did you like get the word out or really like start making some progress with getting trees?
Facebook and Instagram really and friends and family. So my husband, while we were waiting for the kiln, he's like, I'm going to build a logging trailer.
Oh yeah.
So he bought a 29 foot camper floor. It was a guy was going to turn it into a car hauler, but he needed to sell it. And my husband, like Matt Cremona style, like he literally like looked at Matt Cremona's trailer and kind of did a lot of things. He even reached out to him and asked him what gauge steel he used. And he was kind enough to respond and answered and, you know, gave him some tips. And so during that process, I was, you know, filming him do it and posting on our Furnishings by Hand page. And I posted on my personal Instagram and Facebook and families and friends. I mean, here, literally the trees, they just fall all the time. Cause we go through so much drought and then we'll go through such a hard, long period of rain that trees just, they topple too easily. So we literally had trees before we had a warehouse. And then once we found the warehouse in, we just kind of, you know, kept loading the trailer over and taking it over. And then when people were scheduling a tree removal, then I would say, could you please ask your tree company if they would, you know, be kind enough to deliver it? Because we all work our day jobs. So it's hard for us to get there during the week. You know, could they drop it at our warehouse? And some were saying yes, some would say no. Sometimes we would time it that we could drop our trailer off the night before, the tree company would load it for us and then we go back after work, take it. So it's, I mean, sometimes it's a lot of, you know, logistics, strategizing with people. It depends on where they live, where we can get it, because certain areas of town you have to have permits. We couldn't leave the trailer. But it's been good. Right now we have more trees. Like, I've had to turn away a couple trees just because we don't have the log storage for it anymore. We have so much. Oh, wow. And we're weekend warriors, right? Because we all volunteer our time. How much can we mill Saturday and Sunday?
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. So working with like the families that reach out and have trees, you had mentioned that they could get like a charitable receipt for donating them, or can some of them like coordinate with someone to make something out of it, or kind of what's been the variety of interaction with homeowners?
Definitely. There's been, I would say, about 7 who were like, I would love to have something made from our tree. And they understand that we've got a lot of time invested into making those slabs. So I sell them back to them. So I wish we could maybe one day down the road, we'll be like, yeah, here, take a couple slabs. But right now it's about an 8 month to a year investment for us into the process. We've got to mill them. They've got to air dry for a few months. They go into the kiln for a few months, and then we've got to inventory them and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. But, there have been a number of people who bought a couple slabs back, and they either are woodworkers themselves or they knew somebody to do it. And then a few of them asked for recommendations of local woodworkers to make some things with them, depending on what they were making. Then I had some guys that we've met a lot of amazing woodworkers throughout this journey.
Kelly, that reminded me of a section on your website where you call Full Circle Stories. Could you tell our listeners what a full circle story is, and then maybe one of your favorite one or two?
Sure. So the full circle stories are, I took pictures of, sometimes I don't always get a picture of the tree standing. So when I can, it's awesome, because then I could literally go from the tree standing to when it was taken down, to retrieval, to milling it, to the specific slabs, and then the finished product that they made with it. One of my favorites, because it was literally the house next door to two of my lifelong friends. So I played in that backyard as a kid. And one of our good customers, he's come in a bunch, he made a beautiful white oak table out of it.
Nice. Awesome. What size pieces are you looking for when it comes to what you're salvaging?
So the Wood Miser is an LT15 wide. So we could mill under 14 inches, but it gets just kind of hard. So I asked for it to be in between 14 inches and 36 inches. That's the max that the Wood Miser can do, and 15 feet long. Oh, okay. Sometimes the people already have it cut down by the time they know about us or find out, or the tree company cut it. So if it's great when it works out, and I said, can ask for them to say, oh, could you do like 3 10-foot logs, or, 12 foot logs, or 8 foot logs. So the length anything can work, because these guys can turn anything, into them. They can rip it and they can add boards. But obviously starting longer when we can is great, because then if they want to do like a 10 foot table or a really long table, especially if they want to do a live edge table, then they can just get one slab.
Do you guys do anything with like burls or crotches or something in particular for like turners or smaller pieces, or do you guys just focus on slabs?
We focus on slabs only for waste purposes. And that way it's there. If the woodworker wants it, they can cut it off if they don't. But we do cut chunks for turners. Both my husband and I are new to turning, and we got hooked real fast. We have a cutoff shelf, because once the slabs are dry, we'll cut them off so that they have a nice flat edge so that we can stand them up in our racks. And so we put all of those scraps on a shelf for turners or carvers. We do season firewood with some of the stuff that's just like, if you cut into it, maybe it's not that great. So we literally try to use every part of it. We try not to have as much waste as possible.
That's great.
And then sometimes if we do get some decent size, like chunky branches that might not mill because they're too curvy or whatever, we'll chunk those up into blanks and, seal the ends and put them on the shelves for turners.
What do you use for sealing them, now that you mentioned that?
Anchor seal.
Okay. Yeah.
I had a question about your kiln. Could you, it looks enormous on your page. Could you kind of walk us through the construction and how you guys made it and how you use it?
Yeah. So that's about to be our old kiln. So the current kiln is 10 feet by 16 feet and 10 feet tall. So it's a big daddy. The guys just, they built it themselves. They used that pink insulation, like gator boards. It's either an inch or inch and a half. It's thick, and then wrapped it completely in plastic. And we have two commercial grade crawl space dehumidifiers that, you know, pull the moisture out of the wood. Now we received an anonymous, gracious $5,000 grant from somebody through the greater good of community, Greater Atlanta. And we purchased a shipping kiln. I mean, excuse me, a shipping container. And got the Woodmiser KD 250. So the guys are about to start outfitting that to be our new kiln, because we're very quickly running out of space inside the warehouse, and that bad boy takes up a lot of space. We need that 10 foot by 16 foot area for slabs and to put a desk and, you know, be able to do more. There's a lot of guys that come in that are new to woodworking, and they'll need like a, you know, they'll want us to cut the board for them, rip one side straight, or, you know, rip it in half, cut into certain things for them. We have a 20 inch planer and then the giant 8 foot by 10 foot CNC. So people get some slabs surfaced, but we just need more space to be able to do more and offer more services to some of these folks.
Awesome. So when you have the kiln running, what is your average amount of time that a tree will spend in there after it's been rough cut?
Typically 3 to 4 months. Because it will hold. Yeah, it'll hold. I mean, when a load comes out of there, we've got like 80 to 100 slabs inventory. There's a lot that goes into it, and it's all hardwood, so it takes a while. And we typically mill everything 2 to 3 inches thick. So that way, when they do surface it, they still got a decent thickness left.
So what about the new one? Will the new one kind of advance the schedule, or is it more just it gives you more space kind of deal?
It should advance it a little bit. I mean, we're guessing it's still at least going to be 2 months. It's going to be a lot less space-wise. The shipping container is 8 feet. It's a 20-foot shipping container, so it's not 8 feet tall. Yeah, I guess it's 8 feet tall. So a lot less will go in, but that's fine, because then we can inventory it faster too when it comes out. But it should speed it up a little bit.
That's cool. And then, you mentioned you also had a planer, and then was it a slab flattener is what you said?
No, it's a 8 foot by 10 foot CNC, but we use it like a slab flattener.
Oh, okay, cool. And then, so does every board come out of the shipping container onto those machines to get surface on each side before you sell, what does your stock kind of look like? How is the finish product for you guys?
It's predominantly rough cut, and if it's like a really pretty board that we want to just show off how great it looks, we'll run some through the planer. Like if it's a log that we got like 5 or 6 slabs out of, we'll plane like 2 or 3 of them just so that people can see what they look like, and we'll leave the other ones rough cut, and if they want to add it, they can. And same with big slabs. Like we got this tulip poplar that grew up on Lake Alatoona, and it was just gorgeous inside. It had so much color to it. So when these slabs you get all kiln crusty and it doesn't look all that great. So I was like, we got to put one of these on the CNC so that color will pop back out. And as soon as somebody walked in, they were like, oh my God, that's beautiful. Got to have it. So I was like, now we got to put another one on the CNC. You know, those don't have that big of equipment and to really see what it looks like.
Right. Right.
Get that grand pattern.
So I don't want to ask you specific prices or anything, but what kind of price in comparison to like another wood supplier would you say that you're more competitive as the nonprofit, or would you kind of say that you're just competitive?
We're probably definitely more competitive. I mean, we don't want to undersell ourselves, because eventually I would like for this to pay my bills. I do want to turn, like, I will be the first to leave my day job and make this. All I do is hustle for this thing. Like, I eat, sleep, and drink it. Like, I want, this is, I feel like I'm at home when I'm at the warehouse. So I really want it to work, and I really want to put all into it. So we don't want to undersell ourselves, but at the same time, we want to give people that price point that's going to keep them coming back. And I think we do. I mean, we, like, we'll get online and we'll check what everybody's got, and we'll adjust our prices if we need to. I think we range from about $450 a board foot to like $14 a board foot for walnut, except for that deodar cedar. That's pretty pricey. I had a hard time. Like, I called several lumber yards around the country just to be like, what did you price this at? So that's at like 24, I think, a board foot. But it's beautiful.
Right.
It's worth it.
What all kind of variety of woods do you have there?
We have all the oaks, not all the oaks, just kidding, but a lot of oaks because they're all over here. We have red, white, water, and post oaks. Pecan, a lot of nutty woods. There's a lot of nutty trees here. Pecan, hickory, walnut. We've definitely gotten more walnut than I really ever thought we would. I didn't realize there were so many, like, in and around the city. I knew there was a ton of pecan trees. Every house I've ever lived in Georgia's had pecan trees in the yard. Got a lot of hickory and that deodar cedar. We had a sassafras tree, which was super cool, and it smelled like root beer.
Yeah.
I love aromatic maple trees.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It smelled like root beer. And a good bit of silver maple.
What's the process for, like, if someone's interested, are you guys open that they can come in and peruse, or what's kind of your schedule? Because, like you mentioned, you guys have like regular 8 to 5 kind of jobs too.
Yes. So we're open every Saturday and Sunday from 9 to 1. And I've started going in on Tuesdays. I pulled back from the gallery. I told my boss, I was like, I've got to start working remote. I really need to start putting everything towards this to make it work. And so I still work for the gallery, but remotely, and just less than what I was doing. And I've started going in on Tuesdays to see if we can get any weekday traffic. And so far we are. So I think it'll be worth it. And I'll add probably either Thursday or Friday to it soon.
That's cool.
Kelly, how do you find online marketplaces like Facebook or Instagram have increased sales, or, you know, how are you drawing people into the business, into the physical location?
Both of those have worked very well. Every time I have done an Instagram ad, people have come in and spent way more than I spent on the ad. I was always doing like kind of small, but very targeted. Like the very first one that I did, I only spent like $40, but I targeted Atlanta woodworkers and anyone who followed hashtags of anything to do with wood, woodworking, DIY, carpentry, you know, whatever. And got a lot of people, and they instantly came in and started shopping. And then just before Workbench, we all had a conversation. Like, we sat down, we're like, what can we do more to get the word out? And I really wanted to do Workbench. Like, I really pushed for, I was like, we need to go and do it. I was like, if anything, if we just walk around with our name on our shirts in front of a room full of woodworkers, just to help spread the word, it's going to be huge. But I was like, instead of, everybody's saying get a YouTube channel. We can't. Like, the amount of video, the amount of editing and all of that takes, I think that it just feels like it's going to be too much for a weekend warrior. Once we're doing it full time, but right now Instagram, and I have a constant listing on Facebook Marketplace for Live Edge Slabs, and that has brought in a good number of people, but really it's been Instagram and Google, because there's not a lot of lumber yards in Atlanta. So when people Google Live Edge Slab or Woodyard, we're going to come up on the first page.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is.
And that's a big draw.
I always struggle in town. Whenever you look online at a lot of lumber yards that aren't necessarily overly techie, there's no prices, there's no live inventory. And I do think the social media platforms allow you to show, hey, this is what we have, and this is maybe what it costs or what the price ranges are. Wood slabs are intimidating for a lot of people because they're not cheap, and a lot of people don't know what they're looking at. So,
right. And we've done enough driving here looking for lumber. Like before we started this and we would get these custom orders, every time we wanted to go to a lumber yard, we were in the truck for an hour to get there. And then they didn't have it because they don't have a website with what they've got.
Right.
So I was like, when we start this, I was like, every single slab is going to be listed individually for sale on our website. There's a picture of the front, back. There's going to have full dimensions and it's going to be our shopping cart. I was like, I want to simplify it as much as possible so people know what we have. So, I mean, people will still reach out and be like, hey, is this accurate? Is this like, if it's there and it says it's, put it in my cart, put it in your cart.
Well, speaking of that, what about shipping? Do you guys ship?
I just took a little sweet gum slab to FedEx yesterday to go to Iowa. So we've started
all the way to Iowa. Okay.
All the way to Iowa.
How does that work? That doesn't fit in a box, huh?
That's when 26 years of running an art gallery comes in handy. I can make a box out of anything. Okay. I'm a good packer. And I shipped a 119-inch long slab of water oak to LA a couple weeks ago. He paid $110 for the slab. He paid $491 for shipping.
Wow. And did it arrive safely? Everything arrived okay?
I guess so. I never heard from him. I was like, man, I was really kind of hoping. I told him to send me pictures of when he's done with the project because I want to show slab. And that tree was right down the street from me. So I was like, I want to post a picture of a neighbor Tucker tree in LA. So hopefully he'll send me a picture when he's done with the project.
I think that says more about LA than anything else.
Yeah, we quickly got on and started looking at what slabs cost out there. He saved a bundle.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kelly, I have a few questions I'd like to ask, and they're kind of low off the wall. We call this or that. And the first one is, I was wondering, can you give me a definition of the difference between an urban tree and a forest tree, like something more rural?
Yeah. So urban trees are, you know, in the city, on the sidewalks, in someone's yard, hanging out with us every day. And, you know, we're not going into the forest and cutting anything down or dragging out what fell on the ground. Even though one guy came into our warehouse and was like, you can do that. It's legal. I was like, I'm going to go with no, it's not. But I'm okay.
Do you think they have a little more character because of the environment they're in?
I don't know. Maybe. They might. They definitely get some pollutants. That tree that grew up on Lake Alatoona was definitely had some character.
Yeah, a little spalting there.
We have milled through a bullet also in a trunk of walnut that came from the North Carolina's Georgia state line. Of course, everyone's first question is, I wonder if it's from the Civil War.
Mine was like, I hope it wasn't with a saw stop, but that would suck to trigger your saw stop because somebody shot a tree 150 years ago.
Right.
All right. So here's one you're going to think about. What's something besides trees that people should try to rescue more often?
Animals.
I knew you were going to say animals. And I almost put besides trees and animals.
Doggies. Cats. Yeah, right. Cats. Any animal. I'm a dog freak. My whole feed is wood and dogs. Shit, people, us at the state of this world, good Lord.
I like it. Those are all three, you know, pageant type answers. I'm glad you didn't say styrofoam cups or something like that.
I don't trust styrofoam.
So you've mentioned that you and your husband are looking to get into turning. I was curious, has this slab nonprofit maybe inspired other types of woodworking that maybe wasn't on your radar pre-2020?
For definitely turning for both of us, because he's been a woodworker for much longer. When Char started following us, that's how I discovered Decatur Makers. She was one of the people that I got that started following us in that first ad. And so then I started looking at her page. I was like, Decatur Makers? I didn't even know there was a maker space so close to my house. So I took a bull turning class there.
Oh, cool.
And this was like, yes, this is awesome. And now I'm learning the Thunder Laser there. Okay. So that's pretty cool. One of the guys that comes in a lot, he is like our Google. I'm like, I still haven't figured out if he or Google sends more people to us. he works for a business where he's making awards out of one of our walnut slabs, and he cut it into six different like small cutting boards. And so I engraved their little inspiration logo thing into them for them on that laser. So it's been pretty cool learning that. That's totally different for me, learning something like that, but it's a lot of fun.
All right. And last one, what's one tool or piece of equipment that you do not have at the Wood Foundation that you hope to have in the future?
The Wood Miser MP220, the dimensional ripper that, you know, make a nice, perfect dimensional board, because we have a manual mill, and when people want dimensional, that's hard stuff to do on a manual mill.
So yours now just kind of cuts long way, like slab style, and this one would cut both directions?
No, it's a separate machine that you can put like a thing in, and it'll cut the wood into dimensional boards. It'll like give it four nice even sides and make it nice and even. I mean, he's cut dimensional. It's just, it's a lot of, you know, you have to use the anchor hook to like flip it and turn it. It's just, it's beastly.
So we've reached a point in the podcast where I like to do the three tools question. And basically, if you guys were going to start from scratch and you're unlimited budget, let's do that. What would be your first three acquisitions to get started again?
Oh, gigantic wood miser with hydraulics.
Oh, yeah.
That would be number one. An iDry kiln. Mm-hmm. And that dimensional ripper.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because that was probably the first, what we get asked for the most that we don't make a lot of just because it's so hard.
That's probably the most expensive three tools answer we've ever had.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, they're not.
A lot of people are like, cheap. Oh, I'll do a drill and an orbital sander. Kelly was like, I'll take a kiln that costs the same as a Volkswagen. And
Volkswagen, that thing costs as much as my house, man.
Yeah. Shoot. They're crazy.
Well, hey, yeah. Kelly, I forgot one more thing. We've started this new segment where it's like shop scares. I'd love to hear, if you've got one, a story of maybe something that was a close call, or maybe you got scared a little bit working in the shop, a tool jumped back and bit you, or a board fell down and crushed you, something like that.
No, I mean, not a scare. The one thing that was just like one of those, good grief, like really, like my husband was retrieving a giant maple log and the freaking battery to the remote, to the winch went out, and the log was like half in their yard, half up in the air, and the truck was like, so we have a 250 that pulls this 19-foot logging trailer, and the arch is swung out. So in total, we're talking about like 40 feet of stuff in this part of this front of his house, and the tree is like hanging half in the air and half on the thing, and we can't get the winch to bring it in. So I had to run to a batteries and, you know, battery plus place and get the battery and bring it back in there. Like right now, this is when the freaking battery dies. It's like when this, I don't know, 800-pound tree log is like balancing in someone's yard, and they're literally watching us out the window. I'm like, oh God.
Wow.
We'll be right back. Yeah.
Yeah. That would definitely be a good scare. Eesh.
Yeah.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell everybody where they can find you?
Absolutely. So the website is atlantawoodfoundation.org. And both Instagram and Facebook are just Atlanta Wood Foundation.
Excellent. All right. Well, it was great meeting you over the weekend. And thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me. It was awesome.
Thank you, Kelly.
Good night.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank the folks in the middle tier over on Patreon. We've got Tony Langer from Langer Works, Susan DePlantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, Kyle with Footwork Woodworking, Daniel McDowell, and Eric from Overall MakerWorks.
In talking to Kelly and buying this house, it got me thinking about, I've always loved trees, like fruit trees, and she was talking about the sassafras and the smell, and we had a eucalyptus when I was growing up that the smell of it was really nice. And I was just curious, at any point in your lives, were you ever like, man, I really want a satsuma tree, or I really want an apple tree? Was there ever just a tree that you wanted, the cherry blossom, or, you know, I really like the way the leaves turn on a maple, or I'm just kind of curious, because I always wanted a satsuma tree. I haven't had one grow very well yet, but I guarantee I'm buying one at this new place and going to try to get some citrus growing.
For me, I think it was more lilac bushes. My mom and dad in their yard had one in three of the four corners of their yard. And so when we bought, and I had never had a lilac bush on any of the houses that I'd had before until we moved here. But they were kind of in the wrong places when we built the shop. So we were, thankfully, Marvin was a good sport, and we worked around like leaving the lilac bushes to where there's an area when you go out my big back deck that I love so much. And is it's so nice. It really is pretty fantastic. And then we've got the sidewalk that goes over to the shop. There is an area between the sidewalk and the retaining wall that we contemplated. We could have just done sidewalk the whole way or dug it up and put flowers in there or whatever. But there's a lilac bush in that zone. So I'm like, nope, we need to leave this just as is, because that smell, it reminds me of being, you know, back home. And they have such a great sweet smell in the springs when they're blooming. So for me, rather than like a traditional tree, a lilac bush is definitely what I was happy to have here at this house.
What color are the leaves when lilac blooms?
Lilac.
All right.
Purple. The flower is. The leaves are actually a very pretty deep green.
Okay. What about you, Allstan?
Yeah, for me, I want all the stuff I can't have, you know, like I want an orange tree. I like citrus, but
yeah,
unless you're going to put it in a greenhouse, you know, it's not going to make it here. I don't know if you guys have ever been to Hawaii, but they have this plant. It's called plumeria, and it's got a really like, it just smells like Hawaii to me. And I would love to have one of those, but again, same thing, you know. Like, and like I could do it. I could bring it in the house during winter and make it work. But when we moved into this house, the guy that was going to clear the land for us, he was like, he also was like an arborist, like a guy who studied trees. And he's like, you want me to walk you around and tell you what all these trees are? And I was like, absolutely.
Ooh, absolutely. And so
He was like, you've got some really cool trees here. Like, and he kind of was like, we had sassafras, we have hickory. We have walnuts, maples, you know, we had a really big range, and cypress too. He's like, dude, you have like a really good representation of like all the different trees we have in Virginia. And he's like, the only thing you're really missing is like pecan, or pecan. He's like, just a couple different types of smaller trees, and not smaller, but other types of trees. And so I would like to have, we brought in apples, apple, pear, cherry, plum, and peach a couple years ago. And so the next year or two, I'd like to bring in a bunch of like pecans and any kind of nut, like different, more walnuts, more hickory actually produces nuts. So right. Like my chickens, it's right on the road and it drops hickory nuts, and my chickens, the cars would run over them. So we kept losing chickens because they would go out on the road to eat the smashed up hickory nuts, and then they'd get freaking smashed. So, but I'd like to have some of those further away from the road.
Yeah, when she was talking about the nutty trees, I was like, oh, I need to get a pecan tree because I know they grow very well here, and I've never had one, but I remember going to pick pecans up at my grandpa's house.
Now, are any of those, certain trees, don't they have to have at least like two or three? You have to plant them certain ways, and they have to like cross pollinate
a lot of the fruiting trees. But sometimes what they'll do is the trees you're buying at the nursery are hybrid, so they'll take a root that grows well in your growing zone, and then they'll splice on
graft
whatever you want. So they'll graft on so like a lemon in Texas is actually a very thorny tree, so then they'll take they'll take a rootstock that will grow in Texas, and then they'll graft on a non-thorny lemon to try to get rid of that. And sometimes it works, and sometimes you still get thorns anyway. But with fruiting trees, they'll graft together two different, you know, two trees onto the same rootstock, so they'll self-pollinate each other. But a lot of times, though, you can also go just with a paintbrush and and be the bee yourself.
Oh, the birds and the bees with
the be the bee you want to be.
There's a website called, I don't know, it's like crazyfruittrees.com or something like that, but you could buy the apple trees that had like four different varieties of apples.
That's
apple.
What I had when I started fighting squirrels was the apple tree had five different. So, and what's neat about that is they don't all fruit at the exact same time.
Right.
So you would get some apples one month and some apples the next month. And it kind of prolonged how long you were getting fruit on the tree.
Yeah. I wanted to get some of those, but they are very proud of them. They're pretty expensive. If you go for like the major, like the five pack, you know,
now, you know why I was so pissed at those squirrels. So we have one apricot tree that just is getting like fruiting size. And I think we're going to have to leave it. Cause I believe it's too big to try to deroot or transplant. But I am going to take, so you were talking about the lilac. One memory, a core memory, was when we bought this house, the crepe myrtles were blooming. And I remember moving into the house and just all the blooms on the crepe myrtles. And I think I'm going to pull them up and take one or two with me just to kind of remember, because they're super easy to transplant. I literally have a crepe myrtle over here that I pulled out the ground with my truck and leaned against the fence, and it rooted and is growing right now.
Yeah, crepe myrtles are unstoppable.
Yeah, yeah. What color is it, your crepe myrtle?
So there, some are a light pink and some are like a reddish pink. I know it has to do with the tree itself, but I think the soil pH also affects the color of the...
That makes sense.
But yeah, so Kristen's already kind of flagged two of the smaller crepe myrtles. We negotiated in the sale of this house that we can take the landscaping with us. And so that was one reason why. So we'll have 6 weeks with both houses that we're renting this one back through the end of April. And we're going to get the new house next Friday. So when this comes out at the end of this week, we'll have the new house. And so I want to move the majority of this stuff, but we wanted work days that we could come get landscaping and, you know, we can take bricks or I can take my time getting shit out the shop. That was kind of the driver on all that, but definitely the landscaping was one of, because you know, she's got some plants here. She spent 10 years, 12 years getting to where they are, and she doesn't want to leave them. So we asked them, and the guy was like, yeah, it doesn't matter. We were going to tear that shit up anyway.
Are they, because they're bulldozing your house, right?
Yeah. But now they do have crews that come in before they bulldoze the house, and they'll take windows, doors, air conditioning units, whatever they can resell, they'll take out. But, I don't know what I'm going to leave. I'm taking light switches. I'm not going to take regular receptacles, but smart switches. I'm taking all the, every smart switch I put in, I'm taking out. I'm taking out all the copper for the 220 circuits that I ran. I'm taking all that wire with me if I can get it out. Cause that's all money I won't have to spend at the next place, you know?
Right.
I didn't realize they were going to bulldoze your house.
Yeah. That's
why I missed
she's so
all
upset.
That being sick and,
that's why she's so upset, because they're going to bulldoze her house that she loves.
Oh, dang. Well, I just know that like a couple houses ago, after my first husband and I got divorced, and we were going to sell that house, and you're always supposed to like do the extra landscaping and really kind of spruce it up and stuff like that. So I put, I don't know how much time and physical labor into curb appeal and all that kind of stuff. And like within the first time I went back just driving by randomly, and they had yanked all of that out and took out all of the landscaping stones and everything because they wanted to just mow it flat. And I'm like, what a pain in the butt.
That happened to us in Baton Rouge, the house Caitlin and I lived in college. When my parents sold it, they went in and they put carpet and did all this stuff to fix it up. And the people who bought it, the first thing they did was rip out all the carpet that we had just put in and painted the walls that we had just painted. It was a different time. Right now, you don't have to do anything. I'm curious, you know, we haven't seen a walkthrough, and I know those people are moving out. I'm curious what kind of mess we'll walk into. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It'll be trying. I'll say this has been two of the most stressful weeks I've had in a long time between the house, the money associated with the house, and just some things at work. It's been the most stressful 2 weeks I've had in a really, really long time. And trying to finish this arcade. So one driver was like, this will be the last project I do in this shop. The shop that took me from, you know, a craftsman skill saw and a corded drill to where I am now. I didn't have any of this stuff when I moved in.
Right.
When we bought this house, this was Kristen's gym where I'm sitting right now. And I had the kitchen and I had a piece of plywood over the sink and the stove as a workbench. Like that's where we were 12 years ago. And so it's seen a huge, I've learned so many skills and things in this shop space, but I'm looking forward to having more space. I like this. I feel very comfortable in here by myself. Two people, it's a crowd, and I've definitely outgrown it, but I've had some good memories in it. So it'll be interesting.
Great, man.
Exciting. Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman. Dean is at Dean_Duplantis. And Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
On our first tier, we've got Jacob with Griffin Makes, Jacob with Other Dog Design, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concepts, Justin from Bear Maked, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerno, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Designs, The Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin, the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, The Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad Harrison from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney from One Old School Pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan Gallagher with Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell from Full Steam Design, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housework, Ed Johns from BudJoints.com, David Beckwith, Rob DeMarco, Dave at Atomic Airship Works, Earl III, XYZ, Dana and Emmett at Rescue Room on Summit, Max at Camp Arrowhead, and Luke at LJB Makes.